This next conversation is about how an Irish revolutionary became an American Civil War hero. And it begins in the 19th century as Ireland suffered the awful potato famine. In 1852, in faraway Tasmania, Irishman Thomas Francis Marr engineered a daring escape from a British penal colony. He headed for America. The Catholic newspaper, the Boston Pilot, heralded his arrival and declared him the potential savior of America's newly arrived Irish. Then less than 10 years later, Marr found himself at the First Battle of Bull Run, leading a Union brigade of Irish soldiers under a green flag with a Gaelic battle cry. Timothy Egan tells Marr's story in his new book, The Immortal Irishman, the Irish revolutionary who became an American hero. Egan is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and columnist for The New York Times. And when I spoke with him, I asked him about how Marr first ended up in a Tasmanian prison.
Well, he was a rebel. And he was a rebel at the time of the famine, the worst crime in Ireland. 1 million people died in 4 years' time. 1 million people starved to death, barely 30, 40 miles from the richest empire on earth, that being the British Empire. And Marr and his compatriots thought it was actually a crime because they were exporting food in this time of hunger. The potato crop was the ostensible cause of it, but they were exporting grain, beef, barley, pork, all these foodstuffs. And they felt that the British were essentially letting them starve. So it radicalized them. They led a failed uprising in 1848. They were all young men. They were brilliant, included some women as well. And his sentence was to be hanged, drawn and quartered, and his remains disposed of as Her Majesty shall see fit.
But before we get to Thomas Marr's arrival in the United States, I was so interested to see that he didn't necessarily begin as a revolutionary or a firebrand that wanted to pick up arms against the British, right? I mean, you write him as being a comfortable sort of poet type, is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, he was sort of like a young Hugh Grant. He went to he came from wealth, one of the richest families in Waterford, which is the oldest city in Waterford. His family had gone to Newfoundland and made money. They were still Catholic. They came back, and he went to this fabulous, secondary school in England. He came home and some people thought he was sort of foppish. One thing that was clear early on, even before Marr got radicalized by the famine, and the famine is what changed him, was that the guy could talk. And he's just real gift of gab. It's often a cliche about the Irish, but this man was extraordinary. And from here to the very end of his life, he could hold people spellbound. I mean, they say he was the most brilliant conversationalist of his age.
So he escapes from Tasmania. And as we talked about a little earlier, he sails to the United States. When he arrives here, what's the impact of his arrival?
We've never had anything like the situation in America in 1852. It was the peak of Irish immigration. And the famine had been so devastating. I mentioned earlier 1 million died, but 1.5 million at the very least went to the United States. And these were largely rural people. Many of them were illiterate. Many of them had never been more than 20 miles from their tiny little villages. Many of them had never been on a ship. And suddenly they get on these coffin ships, they sail across the Atlantic, and they wash ashore in Boston, New York, Baltimore, and Philadelphia. And Boston itself has the second largest population of Irish in America. New York is the only one that's bigger. And they rarely go more than a few blocks from where their ship lands. They crowd into these awful, horrible tenements. And Marr sees the squalor and he says, I mean, surely there's some greater thing for these Irish. They didn't flee green valleys for this tenement squalor.
Yeah. Well, so then as the United States itself is marching towards civil war, how did Marr begin to see what his role could be in the Civil War?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And Marr starts out as an agnostic on slavery. He's not for it or against it, but he says it's legal. We might as well keep it as it is. And Marr had briefly crossed paths with Frederick Douglass, the ex-slave and orator, who came to Ireland in time of the famine. And he said it was amazing how the people weren't racist. That he said, I find myself treated as a man and not treated as a color. Mm-hmm. But that same Douglass noted that when the Irish came to America, they started to pick up a different attitude. So the great fear was that they would not fight for the Union cause because they thought 4 million freed blacks would take their terrible jobs.
So tell me a little bit more about that, because, I mean, we're talking about the eventual formation of a Union brigade with Irishmen, but obviously that wasn't, as you just said, there was no reason to presume that that would happen.
Exactly. Now, let me just back up to one of the reactions to this huge surge of immigration, which we later saw all the other waves, Italians, Jews, Asians, come from all over the world. But the Irish are the first big movement of people from one part of the world to another, to the United States. And there was a huge pushback. There was a party called the Know-Nothing Party. A lot of people have forgotten about it. But by 1854, they had elected 11 members of Congress from your state of Massachusetts. They'd swept the Bay State Legislature. They'd captured nearly half of New York's delegation. And their entire campaign was premised on anti-Irish, anti-immigrant sentiment. They wanted to deprive these people of citizenship. So interestingly, when the Civil War comes along, Marr sees it as a chance to break Know-Nothing sentiment by a blood sacrifice which would make these Irish fully American.
Oh, interesting. Now, I'm looking at a little gem. There's so many of them in the book, but one that really caught my eye because it's a quotation from the Boston Pilot, the Catholic newspaper that we talked mm-hmm. that I mentioned in the introduction. And the Pilot's view of what the role of Boston Catholics or Irish should be in the coming cataclysm that would be the Civil War was really interesting, because you quote them as saying, "We will not move an inch when you command us to march to a fratricidal war." Mm-hmm. So when Thomas Marr is, given a commission, how does he convince him? He does it in New York and he comes up to Boston. How does he convince his fellow Irish immigrants to take up arms in defense of the nation?
I'm really glad you read that quote, because that shows what he was up against. And Marr has a two-pronged campaign pitch. He does go and make several speeches in Boston. They're, like most of his speeches, they're just people waiting in the street to hear him talk for an hour. And he has a two-point thing. One is, he says, this country took us in. This country gave us refuge. How could we do anything but defend it? And if they want to know whether we're Americans or not, we'll show them in battle itself. Now, the second pitch is more interesting. Well, it's equally interesting. He then says, once we're done with the slaveholders in the South, we'll take these seasoned soldiers and artilleries and our rifles and everything else. We'll sail across the Atlantic and we'll liberate our homeland from English rule, which has, been the curse of the Irish for 700 years by that time.
Ah, interesting. Now, so he forms this brigade, the 69th, right?
It's formed out of the 69th.
Out of the 69th.
A New York militia that's famous. Don't get in trouble with the 69th. They're known as the Fighting 69th. They're still active. they fought in the Gulf War. But it was an all-Irish militia that then, and let me give credit to Abraham Lincoln. Brilliantly, Lincoln names Marr, who's a Democrat, Lincoln's a Republican, as a general of this newly formed Irish brigade that starts with the 69th, but they recruit heavily out of Massachusetts, Maine, all of New England, up and down the eastern seaboard.
Well, let's talk about the losses that they took, because in the bloodiest battle of the Civil War in Antietam, they took huge losses.
Yeah, it was just brutal. Antietam was the bloodiest single day in American history. We had 23,000 casualties in that one day. And for the Irish, it was horrible. But then they fought in Gettysburg, and they fought at all the battles. But the worst for them was the Battle of Fredericksburg. Marr took 1,200 Irishmen. They told them to put a little sprig of green under their caps before they went up this hill, this exposed hill. The top was a rock wall and a whole line of Confederates led by Robert E. Lee. And he said, when they find our bodies, they'll know we died as Irishmen, because they had this little green in their caps. And there were so many bodies. He took 1,200 men up on that. They made 12 charges, and at the end of the day, only 280 were still alive.
Well, in the book, you also talk about how Robert E. Lee himself remarked on the valor of these Irish soldiers.
Yeah, and again, I'm glad you set the context. There was a debate whether the Irish could ever fight. First of all, whether they'd fight for the Union or whether they could fight at all. But in fact, only two other brigades in the entire history of the Civil War took more casualties than the Irish did. And the Confederates were afraid of them. They said that was the one thing we really feared, was when we saw that green flag.
So ultimately, what happened to Thomas Marr?
So he does, prove, the effort to fight the Civil War, the great battles they went through, does make them accepted by the majority. They become legendary. Courier and Ives does these pictures of them. There's front page stories all over the United States about the Irish Brigade win again when others had retreated. So he does sort of accomplish this goal. And Marr becomes very, he incorporates the freeing of the slaves as the reason why the Irish died. They would never go back to Ireland and liberate their homeland. But he gives a number of speeches where he says, we did liberate this homeland, that we did free slaves in this place.
Timothy Egan's book is The Immortal Irishman, the Irish Revolutionary Who Became an American Hero.